Merry Christmas!
Oh, wait, it's not Christmas. It's December 28th. Or December 29th when you listen to this episode. Happy holidays, fam. I just wanted to say it's been an amazing year once again, getting to bring guests to your ears every week. It's been fascinating to listen to a lot of the viewers and listeners and hear them talk about what they want to hear, guests they want to see. And I honestly can't thank you enough. There's one more episode before the new year, so I'll say Happy New Year anyway, but I'll still say Happy New Year in the next episode. But I just want to thank you all. Thank you all. I mean, your support has meant an incredible amount. As Told by Nomads was recently noticed and recognized on Inc.com as one of the 100 podcasts that will make you smarter, better, and wiser. You know, it was number 25 ahead of many, many podcasts that I look up to. And I honestly can't say that, you know, that it will be there without your support and your constant just consistency to listen to the podcast. And I really appreciate all the shares and all the mentions that you give us, Told by Nomads and UID Media in general. So thank you for that. A lot of you have also asked what it's like for a podcaster and someone like me to create content. So, you know, I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Today's interview, ironically, is about another podcast, a podcast that I've come to admire. It's from a very funny lady, Helen Saltzman. We'll get into the episode soon, but I want to talk to you a little bit about what I'm doing. So the past year and a half, you know, going through this journey with you and hosting a few other shows and also running UID Media has led me to really want to be more of a voice for our generation as millennials and millennials all over the world. I honestly feel like, as we take our place as the next set of global leaders, it's time for us to seize our mantle, and we need more access to information, to mentors, to be able to, we need a community of people to build, to talk to or vent about our anxieties, our depressions or rejections. And we need to be able to find avenues where we can channel our passions and learn how to build businesses and just build a community of awesome change makers. And so because of that, I'm going to start raising money for a network of podcasts that I'll be producing and hosting a few of those in the next year that's focused on really helping millennials around the world to become global leaders, to use the differences to make a difference. Like I like to say, a lot of the content will focus on diversity, entrepreneurship, and general millennial topics that we don't get to hear about. I've been producing a few pilots, but now I have raised... now I'm in the process, rather, of raising money. And, you know, I'll play the video that I made for my Patreon campaign. And Patreon's a place where, it's a crowdfunding site where podcasters and other content creators can go to reach out to their users and have them support them. But the reason I'm saying this is to you is because, honestly, this has been the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life. And, you know, for the production to continue, a lot of times, you know, you need support to keep it at a right quality. And now to scale, definitely reaching a level where I would need support from the audience as well as just people spreading the word about what I'm trying to do in order to make sure we really make a global impact. Because I think it just takes, you know, it takes everyone doing their best and just sharing. So the UID Media Patreon campaign is as follows. This is a YouTube video, but you're going to be able to hear it on the audio side. And then I'll put the link for you in the show notes.
Oh, hey there. Roxanne, Tyre Roxanne. Let me just put this away here. So the three words that brands consistently use, especially in the 21st century, you know them. Millennials, diversity, entrepreneurs. But do these brands really understand what it's like to get in the minds of a millennial that is diverse and entrepreneurial? I don't think so. So what I'm proposing to do as the host of As Told by Nomads and Hustle Culture is build a network of content that we, as millennials and entrepreneurs and people that associate several cultures, identify with. I want to create a network of content that you care about. I want to create a network of content that resonates with you. I want to create a network of content that accurately tells your stories. Imagine a podcast that speaks to what it's like for an individual to move across countries. Imagine a podcast that talks about what the challenges truly are like for a millennial entrepreneur in today's world. Imagine a podcast that accurately depicts what it's like to travel from one place to another while having to fit in to a new environment. Imagine a podcast that talks about the world of millennials today. As the host of Is Told by Nomads, I've recorded over 100 episodes of some of the world's foremost experts who are experts in travel, who are experts in culture, who are experts in entrepreneurship. And what I've learned, there is so much more to be discussed. So I want to segment out these cultures and segment out this podcast and segment out all these pieces of content and give you just the right piece of information you want while entertaining you. So help me create this network of podcasts that truly tells our stories. I'm going to be putting out some cool patrons or some cool gifts for each patron depending on the level that each of you contribute to. I really want to make this interactive. So tell me what type of shows you want to get. But some of the things you would have access to would be pilots of the new shows, video access to some of the cool guests that we're having, t-shirts, and whatever we mutually decide. This is going to be a journey that you and I are going through. Because we want to tell the world our story. We don't want to be spoken at. And we want, most importantly, to use our differences to make a difference. Hope to see you on the other side. Signing out now.
So that's the video. I'm going to put the link in the site, but the Patreon campaign, and Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. It's www.patreon.com/UID. It's just a cool thing that I'm trying to do and trying to scale. Would really love your support and would really appreciate you sharing this all. But with that being said, let's hear funny lady Helen Zaltzman, and she talks about how she created her podcast, which is on, you know, an interesting take on language, but also how she became to be a podcaster. It's very conversational. It's a little bit different from previous interviews, but it gives you an insight to a podcaster's life, and I kind of wanted you, the audience, to sort of see, you know, what it's like for podcasters differently around the world to make a living. So without further ado, here's the episode. Helen, take it away.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on 4 different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxon.
Welcome, everybody. Today, I have with me a Brit, Helen Zaltzman, and I'm sure I said that wrong, so she's going to correct me soon, but she's an English podcaster, broadcaster, and writer. She's best known for her work with longtime collaborator Holly Mann, and they worked together to present the Answer Me This podcast, but she's also the host of The Illusionist, which recently won Best New Podcast in 2015. So she's a boss in the podcasting and broadcasting industry, and she's a very creative person who's got an interesting take on language and a very good sense of humor, which you find out soon. Welcome to the show, Helen.
I mean, let's just see about that. That's going to be very subjective, isn't it, to your listeners? I'd give her sense of humor, I don't know, 4 out of 10 max.
Well, you know, there are quite a few Brits that listen to this, so. Most of my family is British, so they're very supportive and they listen. They come from like Milton Keynes and London. It's just various areas. So
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So
Milton Keynes, eh?
Hey, Milton Keynes.
They named after two economists.
They do?
Yeah, but, well, no, hang on. It's named after the poet John Milton and the economist John Maynard Keynes.
Wow.
But it's pronounced Keynes. Go figure. I can't.
Yeah. What you
Milton learned... Keynes facts, everybody. I've got nothing else about Milton Keynes.
So, Helen, why don't you tell us about yourself? Tell us about your work and why you got into this line of work, podcasting, broadcasting.
Well, I started podcasting 9 years ago with Answer Me This because I couldn't get radio work, and I quite wanted to. And so Ollie, my co-host, and I thought, oh, probably within about 10 episodes, the BBC will have given us a show. Mm-hmm. And that turned out not to be the case, but I think that was quite lucky because the podcast became its own end. And it's a show in which we answer questions from the listeners. So we just hear from these people that probably would never want to talk to us in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were trying to direct a show at them, we'd probably fail. Like, we have a lot of teenagers listening. And even though we started the show when I was 26 and I'm now nearly 36. And I think if we'd been aiming the show at teenagers in our mid-20s, it would have just been so excruciating to listen to, and the teenagers would have been very cynical about it. But because it wasn't really aimed at them, they like the fact that they're listening to something that they think is for people older than them. It's inclusive, and they're so interesting, the thoughts that they're having that maybe other people aren't hearing about. And then we hear from people who are decades older than them and from completely different countries, and that's been really cool, just connecting with an ever-growing podcast audience. A lot has changed in podcasting over that time. There weren't even iPhones or really Twitter when we started.
That's crazy.
That's how much stuff has changed. Yeah, YouTube is less than 2 years old.
So you've seen all the waves of podcasting, because we always say we're an interesting wave. You know, you've had when podcasting first came out and everybody was like, wow, this is really cool. And then sort of died down, and then it came back up again, and died down, and it came back up with like Serial and all these people, and obviously the podcast network that you're part of. But you stayed through all that. Did you experience a wave in your audience size, or did you have a consistent audience size during that period?
I mean, I stayed with it because I had nothing better to do. I actually think podcasting has been growing fairly steadily throughout that time.
Hmm.
It was just that journalistic interest evaporated, right, and then it came back with Serial. But our audience has grown. If you looked at at a graph, if you could be bothered to draw a graph, it would look like it had grown pretty steadily. But also, it really got a lot bigger when iPhones and then iPads came out, because suddenly it was just a lot easier to get podcasts, and you could download them to the same. You could press a button and get it on the device that you were holding rather than have to connect a device to a computer.
Yeah.
So that meant that suddenly all these people that weren't necessarily that tech savvy could listen to podcasts, and it was much less of a pain. And that made the audience, it kind of changed the people who were listening to more different people listening.
Right.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. You know something else is pretty cool for you?
Don't tell me.
Oh, well, in 2009, I think you and Ollie, your co-host, made history by being the first podcasters to be given a national show on BBC Radio, which was your initial goal.
Yes, although it was just a series of kind of... it wasn't a series at all. It was a number of one-off shows,
uh-huh,
and then we got put on other BBC shows. So it did bring radio work in the end.
Huh.
But I feel like podcasting is something I love more than radio, partly because it allows you to be a total control freak, because I can have an idea and I don't need permission to make a show about it. I can just go and make that show.
Gotcha. No,
so maybe actually it was, you know, bad for making me a better person.
No, I don't think you're a worse person at all. So okay, so
you don't know me well enough.
I don't know Ellen. So let's talk about The Illusionist. You've been doing this. And then you decided to launch a new linguistic podcast. First of all, why linguistics?
I've always been really interested in how languages evolve. From when I was a pretty young child, I think I started learning French when I was about 7, which might have been pretty late for you, because you seem to have been a very multinational child.
Oh, je parle français aussi, mais pas comme toi. Tu peux parler français mieux que moi.
Excusez-moi, où se trouve... les toilettes.
Well, you know,
I just started seeing these you know, very good at language, very good. But I started seeing these connections with words and thinking, and I learned Latin as well when I was quite little, and thought, oh, maybe that's why it's like this now. And I always really liked studying older forms of English. And so I'd always had that academic interest. And then after I left university, there was nothing really to justify it. Gone on to me this, we get quite a lot of questions about language. So where does a word come from? Or why do we call something the thing that it's called? Or why is this weird phrase something we say without thinking about it? Because so much stuff is actually really weird when you stop to think about it. You're just used to it.
Mm-hmm.
I pitched the show to Roman Mars, who's a friend of mine. I basically said, I'd like to do a version of your show, 99% Invisible, which is about design and architecture, but about words. And luckily he was okay with that. And I don't think The Illusionist is that, because I do not have the production skills or storytelling skills that they have. So I guess it's kind of like an informative entertainment show about language. I don't know. What do you think? What is it? Tell me what it is.
No, I love it. You know, as someone like myself who grew up in different parts of the world, I remember coming across, you know, your show, because I was researching podcast networks, but then I was like, The Illusionist, I wonder what that is. And then I started, you know, listening, and I was like, you know, first of all, I love the dry humor. And then I was like, okay, this is, I need to reach out to her. And then I reached out to you on Twitter. But I think it's an interesting education on language. A lot of sometimes the guests, or sorry, the audience, they wonder, you know, where languages come from. Sometimes people, because I speak English and French, they'll ask me if I ever see a correlation with that. And I don't really see it, but I know based on what you're saying, you can, and you have that gift to be able to connect.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I don't. That is, yeah, I never really can tie Latin words to that word, to that word. I just sort of learn it in a systematic way, and then I'm like, that's just how you say it. So
I suppose I like looking as well. I like finding out the things that I don't already know about.
Mm-hmm.
And so often when I'm going to sleep, I'll think, oh, I wonder where that word came from. And I'll think, well, just look it up before you go to sleep. And then, you know, if it's interesting, it's just game over. That's my mind awake for another couple of hours. But what I didn't want from a language, and I think a lot of people assume that this is what it will be, is telling people how to use English correctly and
right.
Telling them that they've been doing it wrong. And I don't really want to have to tell people what to do, which is a surprise to me and everyone who knows me, but I don't actually want to be that bossy in the show. I'm kind of like, live and let live, whatever, you know.
Yeah, you're just creating that platform.
Around all this anger with me, yeah, about grammar.
No, but obviously you've done something good, because it's been recognized by iTunes as the best new show, and that must have been exciting to hear. Just because, you know, you'd pitched it maybe about a year ago, and here it is at the end of the year, and you're being recognized. Yeah.
It was really nice surprise. Yeah. And obviously, like, it's more validated by the fact that people are listening to it. I mean, that they're the most important judges of it. Yeah. But it's a job I found really hard. I think it's the job I found the hardest in my whole life. And so it's very nice that that people like it.
Okay. I guess. Well, I'm going to go back to that, why it's really hard. But did you find that your background, I know it says, you know, your father South African? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, his parents are actually Lithuanian immigrants to South Africa, but my dad grew up in South Africa and then moved to England.
Yeah.
I guess when he was in his late 20s, so he's been there ever since. But he's still kind of a bit removed from it.
The reason I was asking is because, you know, show's called Told by Nomads. Obviously, people identify with several cultures. Did that ever subconsciously play a role in your interests in some of these things, did you think, in, like, language and understanding stuff?
That's a really interesting question that I haven't fully thought about. I think it always gave me a kind of outsider-y viewpoint of things, I suppose, because my dad had never really fully identified with wherever he was from, because his parents weren't from South Africa, and I think he just always really wanted to leave. Hmm. But it meant he wasn't really from England either. We were like the only Jewish family in our town, and so there was always that sense of difference. And I think when you're doing comedy, then that's often how people making comedy feel.
Right.
And I wouldn't call myself a comedian, and I'm not working out psychological issues through humour in the same way that a lot of comedians are examining their own alienation or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But it just means, like, you're watching and analysing what is happening. And I think in language there's that as well. There's just the constant question in my mind, why is this like it is in the present? What does this say about human behaviour?
Yeah. No, I'm always fascinated by that, and the reason I ask you that is because sometimes people react the same way you did, because they never really think about their subconscious and the fact that they have several cultures.
I avoid thinking about my subconscious as much as possible.
But you know what I find? I find that sometimes it does play a role, and it does pique our interest. And, you know, look at your career. I know you don't call yourself a comedian, but a lot of the work you've done will say that you are quite the comedian. You performed a lot of live comedy. You've done stuff at festivals. You've done it. You've acted in plays, and you interact in such a humorous way where you engage with the audience. You make them feel comfortable. But and that's just from the interaction I've had with you. So I can only imagine what it's like. But growing up, when I was always in between cultures, one of my ways, I always found a connector. I found that finding connectors was easier for me to fit in, because you can imagine, you feel out of place all the time. And for me, it was, sports, pop culture, and geography. But, over the times of speaking and hosting and running media platforms, I found that other people have said humor sometimes was a good way for them to connect. You can be that outsider, but then if you're the funny person, you're welcome. Like, there's good old Helen.
She's good. Yeah, exactly. But it only works for me in English speaking cultures.
Really?
Put me somewhere where I can't speak the language, and what am I going to resort to?
Oh, mine? Okay.
Can't do mine.
What happens when you...
terrible at it.
Does your humor translate to America?
I hope so.
Okay, because
Most of the audience, the illusionist, is American. Thing is, I can't necessarily tell what isn't working for them.
Well, they come back.
Unless they tell me.
Well, they come back.
Yeah, they do come back.
So that's a way to do that.
I think also sometimes when you're listening, you wouldn't necessarily know that something was supposed to be a joke. And so if you don't feel like you're missing out on a joke, then it's fine. But if it feels like there's a joke and you're not in on it, then that, I think, is not a very pleasant feeling, maybe.
No.
So hopefully I'm not doing that. But I wouldn't necessarily know if I was.
No.
Things to worry about.
No, don't worry about it. Trust me. It worked for this Nigerian guy here. So your humor is translated.
Yes. Awesome.
Now I'm going back to that set. You said this is the hardest thing you've done, the illusionist. Why?
I mean, it's not hard, like, really hard jobs are. It's just that most jobs that I've had before that I've found difficult hasn't been the content of the job so much as just either not really wanting to do that job because it's something I hate, or just not having enough time to do it and so having to work ridiculous hours. Whereas this, I actually find intellectually really challenging. And it's partly because I want to learn things in the course of making it. I want to discover a lot of information in each show through research, but I don't know. I'm like, when I'm describing, oh, it's so hard, I'm thinking, why is it hard? Because it shouldn't be. It's just knocking out a podcast. What's the big deal?
No, but you're focusing.
I just want to find an unexpected and interesting angle on whatever I'm finding out about.
Yeah, that's
what I was saying. That's not that hard. That's a pleasure. That's a privilege.
No, but that's what I was saying, because what you're attempting to do is not necessarily teach, but you're raising awareness about language and linguistic in a way that many people, if any, have ever done, right? And that requires a certain amount of creativity. And, the more you have, the more your audience grows. I don't know if that has an added form of pressure, but you always feel like you have to perform. And like, man, okay, that episode was really good. Yeah. I have to top that episode. I have to make sure I don't never get complacent. I'm coming up with a fresh angle all the time. I think that's the plight of all creatives. But that's also an inspirational thing. It's like, I'm going to top my best work in some way.
Yeah, I think it's good to want to make yourself uncomfortable all the time. And as soon as something becomes easy, then you throw in some new difficult element to keep it interesting. So I'm a bit worried that at some point I'll find the show quite easy and then it will become a bit boring and people won't like it anymore.
No way. So one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about podcasting is because you've been with podcasting almost since the beginning. And
almost, yeah. It felt like we were late at the time, but I guess in retrospect, not so much.
Yeah, well, I started a year and a half ago, and people thought... People, yeah, thank you. And people thought I was a veteran this year, so it's not, trust me. Yeah.
Nice that it's still relatively new. That's great, I think. There's still so much to do.
No, and that's what I want to talk to you about. What do you think about people, especially my generation, millennials, who have a lot of stories to tell? And I always tell them, you know, podcasting is a great avenue to do that, but what do you think about podcasting as a mean to tell your story to the world and express yourself?
Absolutely amazing. I love the fact that there are so few gatekeepers, because technologically it's not that inaccessible. Like, you don't necessarily need a lot of specialist knowledge about recording equipment or even expensive equipment. People do a lot on just a phone now, because it's a barrier to entry, isn't it? If you think, I've got to spend hundreds of dollars on getting stuff and then I have to learn how to use it, and that's before you even think what it's going to be about. So I hope a lot of people who are underrepresented in the old forms of media are like, no, enough of that. No, it's time for me to be heard. Mm-hmm. And yet, there's still a lot of white guys in, I guess, late 30s and 40s doing mm-hmm. it, as there are in radio and so many other forms of media that they also dominate. So there's a lot of room for other voices to come in and other formats and just things that I wouldn't even be able to imagine. I'd love to hear shows where I'm like, I don't know where they got that idea from.
Right. So you think it fosters creativity and diversity?
I think it really can. And I think it really will. I'm excited to know what's going to happen. And because it's audio, you can do so much pretty minimal resources. Because I think when you're making a film, if you don't have much money, you can see that in the final result. Or if you don't have people who spent years getting good at cinematography or where to point a camera or whatever. Whereas in podcasting, you can do a lot in audio and you can cover up mistakes and lack of knowledge, and it will sound as good as people who know what they're doing. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm entirely self-taught. I could be doing it all wrong. Who knows?
There's no way you're doing it all wrong. No, but I think that, you know, the thing that resonates the most is the barrier to entry. When I started podcasting, it was immediately that. I was frustrated. You know, because I was thinking, look, there's no media outlet that expresses that I can reach out to or connect with for someone like me, because I have many interests and I connect with so many cultures, and I'm looking, well, everything seems to be so buttoned up and so filtered. So
yes, so filtered, yeah. And so many hierarchies in place.
Yeah,
and just, you know, the creativity is getting compromised at every level of kind of corporate stuff you have to get through in order to make something.
Yeah, and
or that, the permission.
Yeah, there's no, you don't need a permission, right? You can just do that, and that's one of the reasons that I think, and I wanted to bring you on, is to maybe talk about the ways that could be an avenue to express yourself. Despite what you say, I think you're a fantastic comedian, but you're a fantastic comedian, and in a world of many people trying to be comedians. But you have a voice. I mean, you've got many. There are many comedy podcasts. I know there's, you know, WTF. There's Adam Carolla. There's all these people.
Yeah.
But you use a different angle, and that's what I wanted to touch on. Is that you are yourself. You unashamedly yourself. And you express yourself in the podcast that you host, and even your tweets. Because I remember reading one of your tweets, and it was like sad eyed lady of the Boob-lands. It was yesterday.
Okay.
I think it was yesterday.
Yeah, I saw this sweater in a shop window near where I live with just big sad eyes on the boobs. I couldn't even understand really why you would want that on your chest. You know, like some people put eyelashes on their car headlamps.
Yes.
Like that, but a sweater. Very odd, but no, very odd. But maybe I don't have the empathy to understand the appeal.
No, but it's my fault. That's what I'm saying. You don't have to worry about saying something like that, because you're your own boss and you're your own gatekeeper. That's a way that I wanted you to talk to the audience about, because you said the lack of diversity that you see in current media, and you initially wanted to get to BBC, but you saw this was an avenue to get there, and all of a sudden, you know, it sort of took on a life of its own. What are the business aspects of podcasting that people can explore should they stay consistent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, actually, inconsistency is something you could embrace, in that if you don't have to have everything sorted out when you start, you can discover you can evolve a show while you're making it. Like The Illusionist has, I think, improved a lot over its first year and become a lot more like itself. And I don't think it could have had the first episode being like that, because I had to make it to discover. And I don't know whether you're given that kind of time to develop in most other media forms, especially as if you're on someone else's time and they're like, well, this studio is costing X number of dollars per minute, it doesn't necessarily make you feel that you're most creative. So there's that. And I think the diversity is a really important issue, but there's still a problem of discovery. So, you know, if you've got like a certain kind of person who's most likely to be writing about podcasts in other media forms, say, and they're writing a list of like podcasts you have to listen to, they're very often dominated by white men's shows. And I'm not saying that white men don't make great shows, because they do, but you know, other people make shows too.
Right.
And I think you need to talk up those shows more until there are more of those shows and it's a much more level playing field.
Gotcha.
And we're not at that stage yet. And like in Britain, for instance, radio, there are very few women on radio. It's something like 20% of voices on radio are female. And even then, are those in an equal role? Are they leading the show, or are they just chipping in and saying, laughing at a male host jokes? So we're very behind in that respect, which does mean that podcasting is now anywhere. You know, I went into it and I don't really think about my gender until someone uses it as a reason why I can't do something. And in podcast, listeners don't care, really. The show that I make with Ollie, he's not... Neither of us are playing gender stereotypical roles. It's not like he's the main host and I'm the subordinate and he's not a very macho guy and I'm not just talking about childbirth and just skirts. I'm perhaps explaining this in quite a rambling way. But I guess it's just, you know, you can do anything. There's the potential to use a medium like podcasting to really even diversify the diversification. So it's not like I am representing women. I'm just a woman who happens to be doing something.
Right. I love that. And, you sort of started doing it, and I know your husband is a musician, so you had recording equipment and it worked, but it speaks to your point of ease of starting. How did you start growing the audience? What are the tips for podcasters to grow audience?
Well, it was a bit different then because we weren't on social media when we started. I tell a lie, we were on MySpace because it was early 2007, and so that was still a going concept.
MySpace, so, top five friends.
So actually, for the first year, it was a very concerted effort to grow the audience. Ollie was very canny about this kind of stuff. So he would write to journalists who wrote about podcasts, which was really nobody then. And now there are far more people who are interested, saying, oh, we make this show, would you cover it? And oftentimes they were like, well, that saves me looking for something to write about. And the other thing was, we went on MySpace and just befriended people we thought might like the show. Because we thought, oh, we probably would have liked this when we were at high school. So let's groom high schoolers into liking the show, which sounds really creepy now. but luckily now they're adults, so it's fine. Yeah. Some of them have stuck with it all this time. So they're like, I was 13 when I started listening to you, and now I've finished my master's degree. And that's sort of extraordinary and makes me feel about 1,000 years old. And so the show grew during its first year fairly respectably, given that the audience of podcasts was so much smaller than two. But we got to number 21 in the UK iTunes chart, and we knew that we couldn't crack the top 20 because it was full of BBC shows and shows by big celebrities, and we were not big celebrities or anything. And at the time, there were only about 20 iTunes stores in the world, so... We thought, okay, what's the smallest country with its own iTunes store? Well, let's go there and see if we can crack it. So we went to Luxembourg. I think it's got about 70,000 inhabitants. it's sort of squished between France and Belgium and Germany. It's a tiny little country. And we spent a day making a concerted effort to become big in Luxembourg. And they don't like that kind of chicanery there, because they're quite a serious country full of diplomats and bureaucrats, and we were busking jingles on the street and handing out free cookies and stuff. asking them to subscribe to the show. And even though they were very unimpressed, by the end of the day, we were number three.
Wait, you so went to work. You physically went to Luxembourg? It wasn't like
Yeah, we went on a road trip just before Christmas to Luxembourg for, I think we were there for 2 nights, and then because iTunes is actually registered to an address in Luxembourg, we left them this big Christmas card, and someone forwarded it back to the guy who was in charge of podcasts in the UK then. I think now he's managed to, he's the global head, and soon he'll be intergalactic podcast head. And he was like, oh, come in and meet me. That's a funny thing. And then he gave us promotion in the store, and they've always been really supportive of us, iTunes, so they want to help indie podcasters. And now I know you can just email them. You don't have to go to Luxembourg at all. You can just ask them to promote your show. But that was the roundabout means to us getting promotion on iTunes, and our audience just exploded. And then it's been kind of growing bigger ever since.
So you can just email iTunes or...
Yeah, or you can go to Luxembourg. It's a star maker.
Huh, I have no idea. I didn't even... Because sometimes the iTunes is hard to find their email address, but you just...
Yeah.
You
know. But there are real humans who sort it out, and a lot of people get really obsessed with being a new and noteworthy, and they've made up all these weird myths about how long you can be a new and noteworthy and how you get in there. And the reality is, it's people who are... They're dealing with about 300,000 active feeds, and that's pretty difficult for humans to be able to manage. But they are there, and they are trying to promote stuff. They don't necessarily get to see it because of the volume that they're dealing with.
Gotcha. You know, Sometimes when you're creating a show, you need resources, right, Helen?
Yeah.
And sometimes you might need to get a lot of work done. You don't have the time and budget, but luckily you have Fiverr.com. Fiverr.com. And I don't know about you, but they were the ones I used to do my art work and the intro intro and the outro. So they've been lucky enough to sponsor the podcast on the episode. So audience, if you're looking for ways to, you know, get access to millions of creative and professional services from people who love what they do, maybe you're looking for a new logo, internet marketing help, or ways to improve your search engine optimization, all you need to do is sign up to Fiverr.com for free. And if you sign up to Fiverr.com and use the promo code NOMADS, you're going to get 20% off your first purchase. So Fiverr.com, use promo code NOMADS, and 20% off your first purchase. Fiverr.com, any digital service in just one click. That's the first time I've ever done that, Helen. I've never done a mid-roll.
I loved it.
I've never done a mid-roll.
Very accomplished. You haven't?
Yeah, I've never. I mean, I usually just read and record, but I've never done an ad in the middle of a podcast episode. So hopefully hopefully my audience doesn't feel like I went off script a little too much. So we'll see.
I think they like it when you go off script, especially when you're doing an advert. I think that it makes them feel like they're enjoying it more.
Yeah.
And therefore listening more and more likely to use the services that you're talking about.
See, that's why you are the pod mother. You know, there's like Godfather, I call you the pod mother.
I'm really just a very highly evolved sales tool.
So you know, Helen, what is your goal? What's your goal to build? Do you hope to build a media platform? Do you want to build yourself as a media company? What's the
dream? I would not even know how.
I think you're on your own way. I think everyone's their media company in 2015 these days.
Oh, really? I'm so incompetent at any of that. And even looking ahead beyond about 2 weeks is not a gift of mine. And managing my own career, it looks like there was a plan now, but it was actually a hopeless mess for 12 years until some fortunate events aligned. And it looked like I'd really been quite clever, but I hadn't. So actually, this year has been the first time that I thought, I'm not trying to aim for something else. I really want to be doing this thing. I want to be on this plateau and just keep doing what I'm doing. I've never felt that before. I've had such a strange career and so many different jobs happening at the same time. So I've been freelance for virtually all of it. And you kind of have to do enough work to pay the rent, and then some really weird jobs came up as a result of the podcast. And even the ones that were really good always felt like they were kind of on the way to somewhere. And this really feels like the somewhere now. So as the future, I'm kind of trying not to think about it, just in case it's worse. And I don't want to spoil the happy present by thinking about a potentially worse future.
I absolutely get it. But the thing that's fascinating with your career is that you started something. I think too many times, many people are afraid to start. And you started in 2009.
Well, they don't know that they can.
Well, yeah, no, I agree that they don't know they can't. But sometimes, you know, like I didn't start. I had thought of a podcast until like I had thought about doing that for almost a year before I actually did it.
There are always so many great reasons not to start something, though. There are very many rational reasons.
Yes.
And, you know, it takes a lot of time doing a podcast, as you know, because you do one. And that's also not necessarily something people have much of. And also just like there is a lot of fear, I suppose, with any creative pursuit. Like you're not going to believe this, but I'm an unbelievably lazy person. I can waste so much time. And I think it's partly because I think, well, I could start that thing, but if I did, then I would find out whether it was going to work or not. And maybe it's best just to think it could rather than know that it won't. And I think a lot of people are kind of defeated by that little thought trap.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. And the reason why, even though you think you're lazy, I think you started...
I've seen the evidence.
You started...
Netflix watch list knows how lazy I am.
Okay. In this aspect, you started and you stay consistent. You know, it might be 9 years in the making, but it's finally... I guess you're seeing a road, right? You're seeing a roadmap. You're starting to get recognized more and more. You're part of a big podcast network. And you're starting to be a voice for... You know, for diversity, even though you don't want to be one, but you're if you see top women,
I think someone better should be doing it.
But if you say she said top female podcasters, you know, Helen Zaltzman's name is going to be one on that list for sure. And it's just, you know, it's the mantle you carry, my friend, right now.
Oh wow, it's partly just because not that many other people in the UK are female podcasters, so it's not that I'm better than them. It's just that there you're aren't beacon. The other ones. I'd love there to be, and then we could fight for supremacy. But we probably wouldn't. Hopefully we'd all just get along. I'm trying to build more of a podcaster community here, and I'm having these meetups every 3 months or so where people just come to a pub and they meet each other, and maybe they don't feel quite so alone, because it's quite a solitary pursuit as well, doing a podcast. And hopefully that means more people, they won't be spending so much time in the phase where you're just feeling a bit existentially lost with whatever you're doing with the podcast, and that might free up more time for them actually to do the thing. Yeah, well, I don't know, that's the theory. Maybe they just have a nice evening.
Hey, yeah, I think it's is that your podcast support group or the pod club? Because you do like a book club except this podcast.
Yeah, podcast support group is the thing where anyone can come along who it was initially so I could give people advice if they were starting, because there weren't that many resources a couple of years ago, but really now it's for people to meet each other and hit it off, and some of the people who meet, they end up collaborating. That's really cool. Whereas Podcast Club is me and my husband and three friends who make podcasts and radio, and we meet once a month, and everyone has to choose an episode of a show that we haven't discussed in Podcast Club before, and then we all listen to them, and then we meet up and discuss what we thought. And actually, to listen that consciously has been very interesting. And I'm usually doing something else when I'm listening to a podcast, and so to have to fix my attention is quite good for me. And I've had to listen to a lot of shows that I would never choose, and a lot of them I do hate for the reasons I didn't choose them. But at least I've broadened my horizons, and I'm not just having my own taste reflected back to me with the things that I choose.
Gotcha. And they can
find... I'd really recommend it if you like podcasts, or if you are a podcaster, give it a go.
They can find all this on HelenZaltzman.com, right?
Yeah, but you know, with the podcast club, you can just set up your own one with your own rules. You don't even have to have the rules we have, which where like you can't have a show that's already been on the podcast club.
Gotcha.
And also no cereal. That was one of the founding rules. Not an insult to cereal, but we were already sick of talking about it.
It does seem to be the podcast everybody talks about. So, sometimes when I run into people that I tell them I'm a podcaster, they're like, "Oh, like cereal."
They say, "Oh, have you heard of Siri?" Like, where do you think I've been? Even my mum's probably heard of it, and she's not interested.
Yeah,
but in particularly.
That's good. So I'm going to close it up with the air with some rapid fire questions. I don't know how fast you are with some questions. But here we go in 3, 2, 1. Favorite country is where?
Oh, it might be the USA. I'm not just saying that because you're there at the moment.
Favorite city?
Portland, Oregon.
Portland? Okay.
I'm very fond of it. All those happy kind of tattooed people. They're adorable.
Favorite TV show?
Maybe The Office.
Ah, well, that is something that's a great British show. And
now I'm going to sound like a real... I mean, I don't like the British version, but I love the American version.
Okay, well, I like both of the versions.
Okay, well, good. Well, that means you're extra happy because you get like an extra 13 episodes or something to enjoy.
So you like the American version better? You know, I'm gonna, you know, Steve Carell.
I think it's kinder.
Huh? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I like Luther. I think Luther is probably my favorite British show.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, you got to see it.
I should.
Idris Elba. You got Idris Elba.
Lovely does Idris Elba.
Well.
What a dish.
I'm sure we like him for different reasons, but I think he's a phenomenal actor. I've seen his work. I've been a fan since The Wire. And I think he's a phenomenal.
And he's
actor.
Also amazing in The American Office.
Yes, he was. He did have an arc there. He did.
Very surprising character for him to play.
Yeah. Favorite.
Sorry, derailed your quickfire.
Oh no, it's okay. This is nature of the show sometimes. Favorite. Now I've lost my train of thought. Favorite type of music.
Favorite type of music.
Yes.
Oh man, I hardly ever get to listen to music now because I'm editing speech all the time. I like gloomy music.
So Adele. And
miserable music makes me really happy.
Okay, all right, and I'm going to wrap this up with favorite comedian.
Oh, my brother's a comedian, so it has to be him.
It's your brother
who makes the Bugle podcast. Yeah, but he's been like a huge influence on my life as well.
Yeah, it's good. Family, keep it in the family. I love it. So where can where can the audience find you? And you know, what cool things do you got going on for 2016?
Yeah, well, probably a lot more sitting indoors just looking at a waveform of my own voice. But I'll try and make that sound as good as possible. So there's Answer Me This and The Allusionist with an A, which you can find where you find podcasts. And you can Google them as well, and then you get the links to them. And my website's helenzaltzman.com.
All right, I'll put that in the show notes. Put helenzaltzman.com, The Allusionist, and Answer Me This. And then definitely continue to try to get more people to listen to your show, which... You know, I mean, you already did do a good job of doing that, but we'll try and get more different types
Thank
of
you
audiences
very much.
Out there. No,
that would be delightful.
Pleasure's mine. I'm more than happy to.
What a gentleman.
You know, my mom did teach me well.
Evidently did. Credit to the organization.
Thank you, mom. thank you for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure, and I've actually enjoyed the conversation we've had because it's been. I like that we didn't have a structure, I like that we just talked. And we just talked and we talked and it was great.
We jazzed it. I mean, I was quite tempted to, you know, ask you a bunch of questions, but I thought
you should have done that.
Might not be the form.
You should have done that.
Do you ever wake up screaming? Maybe no. I shouldn't have done it.
No, I really enjoyed it. But thank you so much for coming on, and then we'll get more traffic your way. And happy New Year.
Oh yeah, happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uydmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.